Ho, 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 ladies and gentlemen. This is Bump of the Night Paranormal Radio, and we are here with a Christmas special of sorts, I guess. We're going over the history and paranormal existence that deal with Christmas. So, I will once say I am Matthew Ferry, joined once again by...
Christian Sakara.
Patrick Palola.
And we are, once again, Bump of the Night Paranormal Radio. And I will let you take the lead on this again, because you did so well last time, and I thought that was pretty cool. So, take it away, Egon.
Okay, so, I got a little bit of information, obviously, my little essays here. So, I'm bad with pronunciation with the last names there. So.
I believe it's Nissenbaum, or Nissenbaum.
So, Stephen Nissenbaum, probably not related to Rosenbaum. Author of The Battle of Fort Christmas wrote that from 1659 to 1681,
Massachusetts. Should I read it?
Go right ahead.
So, Stephen Nissenbaum, or Nissenbaum, or however you pronounce it, author of The Battle for Christmas, wrote that from 1659 to 1681, Massachusetts made public celebrations of the holiday, Christmas, a criminal offense carrying a fine. Mind you, way before the supposed war on Christmas occurred with Starbucks being the new Skynet, I guess, of the situation. It carried a fine. Apparently, John Smith, yes, the same Pocahontas, John Smith.
Yep.
He's such a loving person. Of Jamestown celebrated the holiday in 1607. However, festivities in America, not widespread, was not a federal holiday until 1870, which in Europe at the time, I don't know when it exactly happened, but at one point it was banned in both Europe and America because of some crazy crap. Now, if you want to elaborate on that stuff.
Yeah, so, I mean, apparently there was a lot of supernaturally occurrences or stories back in those times regards to Christmas.
Well, I mean, more of the history of why it was banned would be...
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different things about why it was banned. We get later on into that more about the peasants and slaves and the poor.
Peasants. All right, go on with the history, I guess, then.
Yeah, so let's see. Known as Midwinter, the solstice.
Saturnalia.
And Sol.
Invictus.
And Yule.
Yes.
It was the longest night of the year in the Northern Hemisphere, representing death, rebirth, and the veil between worlds was the thinnest. That's partially why, so this all took place around December 21st. Before Santa Claus, there was
That one I'm not sure, but I think it says Sinterklaas.
Sinterklaas.
And St. Nicholas.
And St. Nicholas, of
and
course.
And Sinterklaas. Again, you have it.
I guess again, before.
They must have competed in some sort of battle each year to figure out which one's the supreme being of Christmas.
Well, yeah, since Odin would lead a band of hunters, fairies, and armies across the sky during Yuletide.
Which is, dealing with the Wild Hunt, which goes to a lot of other things. The Witcher used that, not this version of it, although it would be great to come across, Santa Claus is one of the main villains at the end there at the game, but I don't think that's going to happen because I've played it. So.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing would be to read the Dresden Files, because Odin actually transforms into Santa Claus.
Do you know how we got Santa Claus? Like, the way we see him with the big white beard, the jolly red belly, the rose-colored cheeks, and the white hair?
Coke.
Red suit? Well, not that Coke.
Yeah.
No, that you're thinking of Jeff Bridges in the 80s, okay? You're thinking of Jeff Bridges in the 80s. But yes, we did. Coca-Cola, which did have Coke in it, in its original formula. So Coke, the brown kind, liquid kind, not the white powdery kind.
Yeah.
Not the snow.
And that was in 1931.
Yes, and that was a campaign to show the world, hey, we made this jolly old fat guy, he's probably fat from drinking a lot of Coca-Cola. We made him our spokesperson, and that kind of leapt into a whole situation on its own. Now everybody believes that that's what Santa Claus looks like.
And just give the gentleman who painted it a shout out.
Haddon, you have it as Haddon Sunblow.
Yep. That's literally how his name, that's his name.
Deep breath, lemon face. Deep breath.
And it was inspired by Clement Clark Moore.
Clement Clark Moore's A Visit from St. Nicholas, a.k.a. "Twas the Night Before Christmas," the song or the story that everybody's heard a bajillion times growing up.
So, let's see here. So, to discuss that...
Basically, what you're mentioning here deals a lot with, oddly enough, Greek mythology, Roman mythology, Christianity...
Pagan.
Well, pagans to me, Germanic. Yep. So Norse, pagan, Germanic, pretty much all the same. Ooh, I was about to say cesspool. That would have been a bad word dealing with religion. I apologize for that. The same pool of ideas or beliefs seem to stem from similar situations with similar backgrounds and beliefs.
And apparently, a lot of our carols come from pagan songs.
Well, yes, so do a lot of... I mean, like, if you look at a lot of religious holidays or any holidays, most of them do stem from pagan or Norse mythology. Christmas and Easter seem to be the two biggest ones. There's many others, but...
Right.
They all tend to come from pagan or Norse mythology and also Wiccan religions, beliefs, so... Yeah. Into Krampus.
Yeah, with the spread of Christianity, folklore incorporated the supernatural with the religious holiday.
Yes.
And of course, we get into a little bit about Krampus.
One of my favorite characters of all Christmas time.
Which we'll get a little bit more deeper.
Oh, you got more into it?
Yeah.
By the way, if you guys have not seen it, and anybody out there hasn't seen it, you like supernatural thrillers or horror movies, I do, because once again, paranormal is my thing, and those tie into that, watch the movie Krampus. Not the B-list horror movie Krampus. I mean, like, the high-budgeted Krampus. Mm-hmm. Really good movie.
Yeah, so his origins became a counterpart to St. Nick and appeared as a hairy goat-like demon with horns and cloven hooves. I wonder who else appears like that.
Wasn't going into that. I didn't even think about that. You know what he would do to bad children, though. Right? He would take you. He'd put you in a sack that was used for coal beforehand, tie it up, carry you on his back, and then beat you with a stick until you became good again.
Like a little pinata.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Little
festive pinata, yes. Minus the festivity.
Yeah, he spun around a couple times, like, swung at it, missed a couple times. But he got the job done. So, they do, they have these festivals. I'm not exactly sure where. I want to say Norway is one of the major ones. And once again, I could be wrong on this. But they have these festivals where they bring their kids to a parade. And it's a parade of Krampuses. And these people dress like Krampus. And they scare the living bejesus out of these kids. To where they're like, no. And there's other stories like that with Christmas, too, with the history of it. There's one that, like, okay, one of my favorites. I'm just going to go into the lore here from what I remember. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites is, I believe it's I forget the word here. When you do something and it's reoccurring. Tradition, thank you. So it's a reoccurring tradition where, in Welsh culture, people would show up caroling and somebody would come dressed in a cloak with a horse's head. I believe it's a horse's head. It's a skeletal. It's a skull. And so while they're singing these carols, the skull would try to convince somebody that you're caroling at their house of to let them come in. And while singing, the other person has to give reason back to you while they won't let you in. And it goes back and forth until one person fails. If the person that owns the house fails, then the one with the horse head can come in, raid your pantry, and drink all your liquor. It's the greatest thing ever. I kind of want to start this because I'll just start having rap battles with people with a skull skeleton or a skull of a horse. I don't know where I'm gonna get that because I'm not a sick person, so I'll have to outsource that or make it. So I'll have to like figure out how to rap battle people at their houses until they give up and let me in to drink their booze and eat all their food. And that was one of them. The other one is there's the Anti-Claus, which would show up in a black suit, I believe, because he was covered in the soot and ashes of coal, because that was a bad thing, you know, like if you were bad, you always told as a child, you're going to get a bag of coal for Christmas, that's all you're going to get. He would show up, and I think he would threaten, insult, and scare the crap out of you until you begged for forgiveness, basically, and, you know, then everything was fine. But there are some crazy traditions with Christmas, and there's a lot of... Oh,
that one, too.
that one...
Yeah, it's an underworld race of goblins known as...
Zori. That's southeastern.
Had emerged in southeastern Europe in the late 14th century with a mission to wreak havoc during the 12 days of Christmas.
So in the 1300s, these basically dark elves would rise up and wreak havoc.
Yeah, pretty much. Goblins.
Huh. Well, yeah, goblins, never mind. Okay. So, that's crazy.
Yes. Well, then we got by 1891, English humorous.
By 1891, is this something you wrote by yourself?
Yeah, I did research.
No, I mean, it's not like word for word, right?
No, it's not word for word.
Good, okay, because that would be bad. By 1891, English humorist Jerome K. Jerome, not to be confused with the nihilist, Jerome J. Jerome. It's a different guy. Commented on the popular tradition in the told after supper. It always is Christmas Eve in a ghost story. Christmas Eve is the ghost's great gala night. On Christmas Eve, they hold their annual feat. I don't know if that's how that's pronounced. That is a weird word.
Yep.
Kind of seems...
This is a direct quote from him.
Okay. On Christmas Eve, everybody in Ghostland who is anybody comes out to show himself or herself to see and to be seen, to promenade about and display their winding sheets and grave clothes to each other. So this kind of seems like a Mexican tradition, actually, of Dios de la Muertos.
Dia de los Muertos.
Yes, that. Thank you. That's kind of weird how that kind of seems similar. There's also one in another culture, and I can't remember where this is. I believe it's of an Asian culture. They would literally every year... They dig up their ancestors, put new clothes on them, give them cigarettes, booze, food, take pictures with them, give them kisses and hugs, and then bury them again.
Yeah.
After they have a huge party with these corpses. It's like crazy as shit. Kind of want to go visit it. I kind of want to go see this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be great to do a paranormal investigation around that whole situation. But it's weird how certain, once again, back to the pool of different beliefs, seem to tie to one... singularity somehow down the line. Whenever five or six English-speaking people meet around a fire on Christmas Eve, they start telling each... We're good. We're not going to bring any ghosts out here. meet around Christmas Eve, they start telling each other ghost stories. Nothing satisfies on Christmas Eve but to hear each other tell authentic anecdotes about specters. It is a genial festive season, and we love to muse upon graves and dead bodies and murders and blood. Which is weird, because you don't have that in tradition anymore, and I would love to go back to that tradition. Just like maybe the whole rioting thing, you know, where you rich people, you're banging on their door like, hey, let us in, we're going to party here, we're going to take your stuff.
That's why during Yule, when they sacrificed the animals, they made sure to put the blood of the animals on the totems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. What did you come across exactly? Did you find anything of interest or, you know, I mean, it could be lore. It doesn't have to be like, remember, we're not diving into facts per se. We're talking about folklore and stories or paranormal experiences that we've come across dealing with the research here that we would explain or try to figure out how this occurs.
Mm-hmm.
So
the only research I dug up on was Yule and Krampus. I couldn't really find that much in depth when it came to Christmas, because there wasn't really much to go on as far as like paranormal.
There, in that aspect, you're right. And it was the same thing with Halloween, oddly. There's not actual... See, we started doing these episodes because we thought it'd be fun to kind of research and try to find stories that of paranormal experiences or happenings that happen on those dates annually. You know, like how residual hauntings occur at certain points in times. with Halloween, we didn't come up with anything other than the Headless Horseman, and that's just, once again, that's just a folklore story that was written by Robert Irving to, well, I mean, based on a story he dealt with while in Sleepy Hollow, New York.
Right.
So, there hasn't been really any paranormal, like...
No, just... Ghost,
I mean, Krampus, ghost, I guess, would be the closest, right? Krampus, well, I guess, well, yeah. You got to think about it. I mean, Santa Claus has got to be a paranormal thing, yeah. Right? Everybody believes in Santa Claus at one point in their life. What if there is really a Santa Claus?
Maybe.
Well.
What if he just gave up? He's like, you guys get greedy. You wanted an iPhone. I was going to give you a wooden train.
Well, you see, the idea of Santa Claus can be traced back to the monk named St. Nicholas. He was born in Turkey around 280 A.D.
280 A.D.
Yeah, 280 A.D. He gave away all of his inherent wealth and traveled the countryside helping the poor and sick, becoming known as the protector of children and sailors.
Interesting.
And then, of course, we have Krampus again. He would be with St. Nick on his journeys and, like you said, would visit the misbehaved little ones, while St. Nicholas would go to the well-behaved kids and give them gifts.
So basically, they'd show up all like... bad cop, good cop style, right? Banging on the door like, hey, ho, 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 let us in. And then, you know, the kid would be like, hi, F off Santa. And then, like, Krampus would be like, Saint Nicholas, calm down. I got this. I got this. Kid, come with me. And then he'd beat him with a stick and a sack. And he's like, I'm sorry, Santa. I love you. So basically, that's basically what happened. Basically, that's basically, well, okay, that was a very... what had basically happened, that was so basic. So basic... God damn it. Anyway, so there was a time where... can we get that as a movie? Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta doing their same characters from Pulp Fiction, but one's Krampus and one's Santa Claus. We all know who needs to be Krampus. We all know he drops the MF bomb quite a bit. It'd be hilarious. So, yeah, they used to ride together. What happened?
Yeah.
It wasn't a ride and die situation, right? It was just kind of like, I guess maybe you're taking two things too far. These kids want iPods. I don't want to deal with that. I'm going to end up beating a lot of kids with sticks. It's not part of my job anymore.
Does that mean that, like, okay, so since Santa Claus and Krampus are... and theoretically speaking, representative of, like, good and evil, per se?
Yep, pretty much. That's exactly what that is. If you were a bad kid, you got beaten with a stick and a sack. If you were a good kid, you got a wooden train.
Does that mean you also went to heaven, too, if you believe in Santa Claus?
We're not getting into that. That's a totally different thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, we get what Christmas is about to a lot of religions. It's usually about a birth of a child from a virgin. And this is in a lot of situations, so I'm not going to name names here of religions. But there are a lot of religions from... I'm going to just say all of them. I'm not going to name names. Where there are a lot of situations where a baby is born around this time via birth from a virgin. My take on that's a little bit different. I mean, I could see back then it'd be way easier to get around things and have loopholes since there wasn't, you know, phones and social media. Whoa. Well, we didn't do anything. How are you, this guy told me I would be, and, his son's gonna be the next big thing in the world. And then all of a sudden, Prince was born. Yeah. And he went on to make great music.
So, back to that.
Oh, so you're highlighting, okay, so, you gotta learn how to, like, do this stuff. Due to the popularity of ghost stories and Christmas that aided the fascination with the paranormal... and thus rose spiritualism in the Victorian and Edwardian eras. With
seance.
Yeah, I know what it.
That wrong.
I know what it says though. That's the bad part about this. With seances and the use of spirit boards, like a Ouija board.
Ouija board.
Which we dealt with here on the show. Now we need to do a Christmas Ouija board session.
Yeah, because we did a Halloween one, so why not?
Oh, all right.
We just can't have anybody named Holly at it, just in case somebody decides to come out of the board and deck the halls with the bowels of Holly.
Can we still have mistletoe over it, though?
I'm not sure how that's a weird one, too. I wanted to look up how that came about, because that's a strange thing. But like, You kissed me under this plant. Like, why am I going to kiss you under this plant? Why are we doing this? With seances and the use of spirit boards became more bogus, as did the holiday trend. With the religious movement faded from the spotlight in the 1920s, ghost story tradition stuck. I know what it... I'm getting that now.
Sorry.
Stuck around even in the English slightly cool... Even in the English, slightly cooled on it during the early to mid-war torn 20th century. So around the 1900s. So basically like when World War I happened and then World War II. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anecdotally, it seems Halloween dominates the season of the paranormal, even within the United Kingdom. But the Christmas tradition has not entirely faded. 1970s BBC special, A Ghost Story, or as Christian has put it, The Ghost Sotori, for Christmas has returned to air in recent years. The Guardian has published 5 such stories over the course of as many days in 2013. Christmas in America became defined especially by the jolly and yet supernatural Santa Claus character presented once again in the 1930s by Coca-Cola advertising a story by Haddon to be their spokesperson.
It is the folklore of Christmas. Within America and the 20th century was...
I didn't know we were going into the future with this.
202nd century?
That would be... What would that be? 200... 200...
You want me to read it?
202th century?
you want me to read it?
No, I got it. Would be like 2100. All right. America in the early 20th century was Candy Cane Sweet.
Yeah,
like, did you come up with this yourself?
With the
references and stuff. That's kind of became.
Well, some of the references, yes. Like,
I don't want to get busted because I'm the one reading this stuff. I'm the one that's going to get busted here for copyright infringement or.
Copyright.
Steal from writers.
No copyright infringement.
Can't remember what it's called now.
Right. Plagiarism.
There we go.
No, I don't plagiarize. I just.
Okay.
Anecdotally find what I want and then put it in my own words.
Lacking was the ominous spookiness that reminds us to seek the light.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, we're getting into one of my favorite stories of Christmas.
Yeah, the Grinch who stole the Christmas.
The Grinch is a modern day
Krampus.
Krampus?
I was going to say romp. I was like, yeah, it's a modern day romp, you know? This is a more lighthearted episode because it's Christmas. It's a joyous time of year, except for the ghosts. But we're trying to keep them away, so bear with us, folks. Rod Serling toyed with the toyed with that literally in one case.
Yes.
Saturnalia is what the Romans? Romanians?
Romans.
Okay. Romans celebrated to honor the god of agriculture. This star in the week... Yeah. Okay, I'm just making sure. Star of the week leading up to the winter solstice and continuing to... Okay. This is why I was having you take over, because reading your notes is a bit hellish. Or a bit... At this part, it gives me Krampus. So... I'm going to try to get through... I'm going to try to read... Okay, so bear with us, folks. You write like I drink. That's the... Okay. So Saturnalia was hedonistic time where food and... Ooh, I like that term, hedonistic. It's my favorite type. Hedonistic time where food and drink were plentiful. And there's other things that were very plentiful during hedonistic times. Drinking plentiful. And the normal Roman social order was turned upside down. Oh, here we go.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, cool. For a month, enslaved people were given temporary freedom and treated as equals. Schools and businesses were closed that everyone could participate in the holiday festivities. Mm-hmm. In addition to Saturnalia and the, not sure about that word, observe Juvenalia, a feast which honored the Childern. Is that Norse for children? We're just going to say it's Norse for children. Of Rome. Members of the upper...
Classes.
Yeah. I got that. Well, because there's a caste system too, which is similar to that word that you use. So, often celebrated the birthday of Martha? Mithra?
Mm-hmm.
That's I pissed right. something off. I see you're already getting me in trouble here. We've already brought the spirits on. Of the unconjurable son of December 25th?
There you go.
Thanks. Unconquerable son. This might be our best episode yet, actually. It's entertaining. Mithra was an infant god, was believed to have been born on a rock, and for some Romans, Mithra's birthday, or is it? It's Mithra. Okay, so yeah. You get it. Birthday was the most sacred day of the year. So now that makes me wonder now, because we're definitely not doing a New Year's special. Is that supposed to be Baby New Year? Like, is that where we got that from? Does that...
Probably, but as you see, December 25th also...
Well, once again, ties into the same thing.
Yeah, same thing that we've been...
Kinda... Maybe whoever came up with New Year's is like, God, there's too many babies already on the 25th. All right? So they did New Year's, and then that just led to a bunch of babies being born 9 months later, which would be September.
Right.
I know what my parents did on New Year's. I'm not stupid. I was born on September, or in September. The idea of Santa Claus can be traced back to a monk named Saint Nicholas, who was born into... You already did this, so...
Yeah, which we already discussed.
Let's go back to what happened to... with the people being equal.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically... And that kept going for a while. And it got worse. Yep. You know, like, in the UK, it got really bad. Because people would just start rioting on Christmas. Like, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. They're just like...
Mm-hmm.
Let's burn it all down. What are they going to do?
Oh, Black Friday. We'll just riot.
Well, that didn't exist. Although, Black Friday should come after Christmas, because then it would make sense, because it'd be like, oh, everything's burnt to the ground, because we didn't celebrate Christmas that year.
Yep.
Basically, it got to the point, and this is why it got banned, is that everybody that was lower class would just riot. Because there's, like, more of them. You know, it's like the eat the rich situation. There's more of us than all of them. So why are we, like, you know, why aren't we having fun eating and feasting? So they'd randomly show up to cities and towns, and they'd basically kick down doors, break windows, burn things down. If the rich were involved, they'd be like, hey, we'll make you a deal. You let us party with you. And mind you, I believe it was a week-long experience back then. It wasn't just... Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, they partied for a week, and they partied hard. So during that week, it got to the point to where rich people were like, yeah, we should just let them in. We should just let them in and be joyful and thankful that they're not burning our stuff down or kicking in doors and breaking our windows, and we should just let them eat and drink, and we'll all party together. So, as I mentioned earlier to you, with the figgy pudding line in one of the songs, give us the figgy pudding, give us the 50, you know, however it goes, we won't leave until you do. Thinking back on that now, it wasn't just a joyous, like, give us the figgy pudding. It was not a happy thing. It was more like, give us some figgy pudding. We're going to burn your house down. We're not leaving until you do. So it was a threat.
Let's do a metal rendition of a Christmas song.
Don't tempt me. Deck the halls with the bowels of holly. So yeah, it got to the point to where it got banned in a lot of places until it became the happy holiday that we know now.
Mm-hmm.
As far as actual paranormal legends and stories, other than, you know, what's more of a obviously fictional realm of things, did you come up with any reoccurring anniversary style or residual hauntings that seem to occur, you know, like with Gettysburg on anniversaries of things, you'd see the ghosts fighting the war and stuff. It's residual.
The only other thing I can think of would be Elf on a Shelf.
Yeah.
That's not paranormal.
You want to consider that paranormal?
No, it's easily provable. I can scientifically prove that right now. Your parents are hiding the elf. How old are you? You still believe in that fucking elf?
No, I don't.
It was a joke. I clearly understand that you don't really believe that the elf is moving around and doing crazy things.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I probably am better off not having kids because that thing exists.
Yeah.
Because I'd make it do the craziest stuff ever. But like, why is the elf on the shelf sitting in your car in the garage with the engine on and all the doors locked? I don't know. You were being bad yesterday. You wanted a way out.
Your favorite author.
Washington Irving. See, I didn't know about this. So, I can't read this. I can't read this. So, I'm going to have to go through this real quick. So, in the 1800s, Americans, I guess, started to get back into Christmas and reinvent it. They changed it from the crazy, riotous situation that it was before, more into a situation where families were more connected, and that's how everybody has that family tradition, where we get together, we eat, and we yell and scream at each other until somebody gives us something, and then we're like, oh, everything's good now. And then, you know, that's Merry Christmas. We got into the turmoil of the rich and the lower class, and then there was, I guess, a tale from Washington Irving called The Sketchbook of Jeffrey Crayon, which I had never heard of, so I'm not sure what this is. So you have to explain this to me, because I didn't know about this. This is up to you.
No, I mean, it was just the whole thing was a series of short stories about the celebration of Christmas. And
like the early or the newer family and then, traditional stuff?
I believe it was more of the, to what he perceived.
He watered down what it was originally was, because I see the choirs coming into homes. Yeah, oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, all right. So yeah, he was like, can't really write the fact that people were beating the crap out of rich people and taking all their stuff, can I? I'm like, oh, they didn't want to party with us, so he wrote a more family centric.
Yeah, he wanted to make it more warm and heartfelt.
Which is weird, because his other stories dealing with like horror or, I don't know, fantasy? I mean, like,
yep.
They were more dark and twisted, you know? Like, I forget what his name was, but the guy that fell asleep at a tree for 40 years and then woke up and everything was completely different.
Yes.
And, well, obviously, Sleepy Hollow and...
Yeah, if you want to find out that guy's name, just listen to the Halloween special.
Because we did find it. I just... it's weird. I can't remember that. It's not Rumpelstiltskin. It's... Not John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith. It's close to that. It's a weird...
Jingle?
No. It's a character that's based on a folklore story in, like, Michigan or something like that, where a guy fell asleep by a tree, and because he was happy and content with his life at the time, he fell asleep and he woke up 40 years later and everything had changed and was completely different.
So, also, Irvine, Washington, and Senor Charles Dickinson were buddies, apparently. Because they both influenced one another.
So, Richard... Wait, what? Charles Dickens.
Yeah, Christmas Carol.
Yeah, I know who it is.
Oh, okay. I'm
just trying to shorten his name, and it comes out to Richard Dick.
Yes.
Charlie Dick. Anyway. Oh, I thought you said that they created it together.
No. They influenced each other.
They influenced it. Okay, so a lot of authors do that, actually, which is cool. I'm reading someone now that influenced H.P. Lovecraft and Edgar Allan Poe, and it's crazy because it's way before their time, but it has the same horror, and I didn't know that that existed before them in that capacity. Just like with Dickens. Dickens was great with like ghost stories and things like that. He was a great author when it came to that. That every year I watch at least two iterations of A Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. Anybody want to take a stab at which ones they are?
Muppet.
That's one.
Do you do the Jim Carrey one or no?
No, that's garbage. No, I love Jim Carrey, but that's... No, it's actually the one with... Picard.
Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, with Patrick Stewart. Those are the two I usually watch every year. Oh, three, I'm sorry. Scrooged. Scrooged is probably my favorite one. Yeah, so basically we went from...
horror, scary...
Hedonistic.
Yes.
I'll just say hedonistic. Because originally it was, once again, it was one of those situations where you got together and did special things to make sure that your bloodline kept going. Maybe that's what kissing under the mistletoe was about. I don't know. And then we went into how it became violent and riotous. Then now it's now family centric, which goes back to the fact that originally with the pagans and the, you know, Norse, it was still kind of about family, just in a weirder way. It was more like creating it, so it kind of looped.
Kind of weird. There's other names for St. Nicholas.
So there's other names for St. Nicholas there, right? In the 1700s. In New York. So we go back to New York in the 1700s. Dutch families would get together and honor an anniversary, I guess, of a man named St. Nicholas, which is Dutch for St. Nicholas. A.K.A. Sinterklaas, which is Santa Claus, kind of abbreviated. Mm-hmm. So what else is there to go on? Because you You haven't really said much, so do you guys got anything to add to this?
Well, I mean, I said much through the essay, which you kind of read for me, so sorry for writing quickly and non-grammatically.
You work with computers. There's a thing called autocorrect and autogrammar.
When you're kind of...
I'm surprised you weren't correcting it when it was written.
He did that once and it threw me off. I'm like...
I was like, look at all the fucking
blows. Yes. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing with Christmas. It's interesting how it became what it is now. I mean, it used to be for, like, the paranormal as opposed to, like, Halloween and stuff. Like, they were all kind of...
It's got an eerie... evolution that parallels Halloween in a way. It goes from a pagan tradition or a Wiccan tradition, and somehow with other religious beliefs gets tangled into these different webs of stories that change and create different occasions and lore to where it comes back to something different. And it somehow becomes family oriented. Like when I was a kid, like, it was odd. With Halloween, when I was a kid, Halloween was cool, but there was a lot of people that really did not like Halloween. Like, there was a huge outcry. Oh, it's, you know, it's bad. You know, it's satanic and all this stuff. And it ties back into the fact that that has now become, like, you go to Indian River Estates, when it was just a bunch of us in that neighborhood that we all grew up, you know, loving Halloween, that it became this huge, huge
block party.
Yeah, it's a huge block party. You go there every year. It's the same thing. There's bands playing. There's haunted houses like all over the neighborhood. There's hundreds of people walking the streets all having fun. It became more of a family thing. Back then, it was just us kids running around playing pranks on each other, going to the haunted houses that would show up. And, you know, and you had people that frowned upon it. So you'd go down certain streets and there's certain parts that would have lights off, you know, because you don't go to those houses because they are not participating. And now it's like a full-blown thing. And Christmas has been that way since it became the new family, well, not new, but newer family-centric holiday that it is. Whereas before, it was like the Purge. It was like the Purge, man. It was like, oh, you guys are equals. You can do whatever you want. And they're like, we're going to destroy your house. Can't do that. Then you're going to feed us, give us drink, and party with us. And then we'll leave you alone. So, yeah, like, the Purge movies can kind of loosely be based on original Christmas. Now I want a Christmas Purge movie.
That'd be interesting.
All right.
There's something about... so Christmas was canceled in Boston.
Yeah.
Which was... We'd mentioned Massachusetts. Yeah. So that makes me wonder if it was just Boston or if it was all Massachusetts. Because that says Boston.
Yeah, the other
one. The other followed suit.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, I don't know. I didn't come up on anything that was very, you know, where there's any factual...
Apparently there were. The celebrations were rowdy and recruits a lot like today's Mardi Gras. Interesting.
I can see that.
Oh, that's terrifying, because Mardi Gras seems like a fun time. But when you get down to it and you talk to people that have actually been to Mardi Gras, it's hell on earth.
I've only been to one that was in Orlando.
That's not the same.
I know it's not
That's the same. At Universal. So, there's a lot less used prophylactives on the ground and other things. Yeah.
I can't imagine the cleanup.
It's a cool little tidbit there that you came across. This is the history. This is history.com, so yep. I don't know if I can say it outright. So, I guess eggnog was first introduced in the United States by John Smith. Same John Smith as, Pocahontas.
Interesting. So not only did he help the celebrations to become more spread, he also invented eggnog.
I don't think he invented it. I think he was the first to introduce it here.
To us, to the United States.
don't Edison this man, all right?
Okay.
Or don't Tesla this man. He's more like Edison in that aspect. Don't Didn't know that either. That poinsett has come from a man named Joel R. Poinsett. He was an American minister who preached in Mexico. That's kind of cool. That's
interesting, yeah.
Don't want to deal with the next one because I'm not talking about them. So Rudolph. We just debunked Rudolph, too. Well, yeah. The only ghost thing I believed in was his glowing red nose. It seemed more logical than most stories of the paranormal.
Oh.
No, you didn't think he was just very sick?
Reminds me of Zero in Nightmare Before Christmas.
See what you did there.
Which is supposedly the dog Frankenweenie.
Yeah.
So that means Rudolph was really sick, and that's why he had a red nose.
That's horrible. That means Rudolph dies right after he gets back to the North Pole. Mm. This is ended in a dark note. What are you doing?
That was a sickness, not through poaching or anything.
Okay, so upon further review and further investigation, have you come up across, once again, any residual hauntings, anything that deals with Christmas that can be traced historically other than to authors, preachers, ministers, different religious beliefs, or families telling stories to each other that would be passed down and passed down through generations that deal with actual ghosts, once again, that don't tie back to authors, so don't say Christmas Carol, that can be either proven correct or investigated or debunked?
Not I.
Unfortunately, I'm not.
Okay, so I think, once again, we kind of ran into the same thing with the Halloween special, which is kind of cool because this is what we do. We go over research, we dig into things, and if we can figure out if there are actual stories that can kind of have an ounce of truth or realism to them, we figure out how we can debunk them. But there is none that we could find to even try to debunk other than historical things. And
right.
So I guess, once again, we've debunked a holiday inadvertently. That's kind of bad. We're 2-0.
I mean, at least we're finding out that there were like stories in a sense, but nothing like really concrete.
Does that mean when we get to St. Patrick's Day, I'm gonna have to say that leprechauns aren't real?
Probably.
Damn it.
Or maybe they are. Maybe we'll have more luck as opposed to these two.
You have to understand the whole saying having Irish luck. Or the luck of the Irish isn't exactly being lucky. It's having the luck of the Irish.
It's actually having bad luck.
Thank you. Yeah. And leprechauns, they aren't friendly. The horror movies actually captured leprechauns in the way that they would pretty much be. They're very angry little beings that if you take their gold, they're taking your limbs.
That's pretty good movies.
Not all.
Well, not all of them. Also, they talk about that in Extreme Ghostbusters, too.
Did you steal Warwick? I told you not to steal Warwick Davis's fucking gold watch again. Sorry, excuse me. Oh, no, that'll be the one that slips. Merry Christmas. I was quoting Samuel L. Jackson. So you stole Warwick Davis's Rolex. I told you not to. Obviously, he already knows. And we'll see the Rolex.
This one's next.
Oh.
So, I guess...
I think that covers it. I think we did a good job. We kept it under our normal 2.5-hour slog that we seem to rant on and do things. We covered pretty much everything.
Had a couple bloopers there in the beginning, but we got past it.
That we did.
So this is Hocus Pocus. And
you're watching Disney Channel.
This is the Sanderson Sisters. I call the fact that I'd be Sarah Michelle Gellar. All right? You get to be the one that played Peggy Bundy.
Okay.
Not Peggy Bundy, I'm sorry, Peggy Hill. If you can sing like Bette Midler...
I cannot.
Fuck, we're screwed then. There it goes too.
But I will make it work.
Anyway.
Maybe
it work. It's Christmas. There's got to be some raunchy stuff in it, right?
Yeah.
All right.
I guess we'll...
You're good. Just release it, we'll be fine.
Okay.
I don't think kids listen to our show. Yeah. We're not Mr. Beast, all right? We're not offering people... millions of dollars to do stupid stuff. I guess with that being said, do you have anything else to offer to it, Patrick?
No, but I will say that with the year coming to a close, I know that we'll get a little bit more better and organized as the
holiday season dies up.
Yes,
I think the last two episodes. I feel like we did well with the last two episodes, this one being included. It's been crazy. It's been hectic. We got it together. This should be hopefully up by tomorrow, or not up by tomorrow, but it will be up sometime tomorrow or the next day.
Yeah, probably.
It'll be around Christmas. It's still a Christmas special. Yeah. We have a Christmas special. We're like Charlie Brown. We are like the Grinch. We are like SNL. We are like anything else. We're like David S. Pumpkins because we have a Halloween special. Mm-hmm. I love that. Any questions? I don't know. This is cool. We got two holiday specials we didn't plan on doing per se, but we did them. We got them done. Did you find anything else that you wanted to add to this?
No, it's just our own thing.
And we're part of it.
Yes.
Okay. I guess with that being said, we must bid you adieu. This is, again, Bump in the Night Paranormal. I am Matthew Ferry, joined once again by
Christian Sakara,
Patrick Palella.
And
remember, folks, if it bumps in the night, we bump back. 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 Bump back.